Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Whatever happened to bipartisan cooperation and deal-making, and what influence did party leadership have on the way lawmakers got things done? Before one-time Dallasite Robert Strauss was elected chairman of the National Democratic Committee in 1972, the party itself was deeply divided and so broke it struggled to pay the phone bill at headquarters. Strauss's shrewd and disciplined management, not only of finances but of internal conflict, gave his party the momentum to regain multiple congressional seats in 1974 and the White House in 1976 with the election of Jimmy Carter. But loyal as he was to his Democratic comrades, Strauss also helped engineer multiple bipartisan initiatives, including the ratification of the Tokyo Round of multilateral trade negotiations, and he served as an advisor to President Ronald Reagan and U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union and then Russia under President George H.W. Bush. So what made this Texan such an effective and popular leader, and what remains of his legacy today? Author Catherine McGar shares Strauss's life story in her new book, The Whole Damn Deal, Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics. Catherine, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Robert Strauss's career in some ways represents an era that seems to be long gone, where it was okay, even encouraged in some cases, to work with people in the other party as opposed to strictly against them. What do you think made him so good? What personal qualities at finding a way to work something out that worked for both sides?
Well, first of all, he just had a wonderful personality. But he always said that, you know, if he just had a personality, he wouldn't be able to get things done in Congress that he got done. He always said that he really looked out for their business. So he was really looking out for his Democratic and Republican friends in Congress. But what was so remarkable is that he came to Washington in that very partisan position of being treasurer and then chairman of the Democratic Party. And in spite of that, when he went on to be trade representative under Carter, he got that bipartisan cooperation on the Tokyo round of the trade bill. And it was just unprecedented. It passed with 90-4 votes in the Senate, 395-7 votes in the House. And he said at one of the hearings in the House, he said that he was glad that even though he came from a partisan position, it's mighty comforting snuggling up to his Republican friends. And he was glad he hadn't taken any cheap shots. And that's one of the big differences, that the cheap shots, he didn't take them. And today, that's not the case.
One thing he was really good at throughout his career was raising money. And it's interesting that that's a skill he discovered when he was still an undergrad at UT.
Yes. Although he wasn't really involved in politics at the University of Texas, he did become a member of the Cowboys, which was, you know, one of the all-men sort of prestigious social clubs at the time. And he also became very involved in his fraternity, which was a Jewish fraternity. And he mandated that every sorority and fraternity member buy a ticket to, you know, the carnival that he was organizing. And he managed to do some excellent fundraising. And then he knew when he got to Dallas that that was a skill that he could capitalize on.
I thought it was really interesting. It might surprise people that he hadn't really even felt any anti-Semitism in the little town he grew up in. But then when he got to UT, of all places, things felt very different.
Yes. Well, he grew up in Stamford, Texas. It was a tiny town of about 3,000 or 4,000 people in West Texas. And his was the only Jewish family. There was another Jewish family in town, but it was his cousins, mm-hmm. and they lived a block away. And he didn't experience anti-Semitism himself. He was accepted by his classmates, and his family was really integrated. You know, his uncle played golf at the country club, and you know, was on a bunch of boards. And his father was a very well-respected member of the community. But then when he got to the University of Texas, the student body population was larger than, you know, the entire town mm-hmm. that he had come from. And he didn't realize he would be ghettoized. And he didn't realize that he would only be invited to join the Jewish fraternities. And that was kind of a shock to him. But he realized that having come from such a small town was actually a benefit to him because, you know, some of the boys in his fraternity who had come from Dallas, for example, were used to only socializing with other you know, Jewish friends, and he was not used to that. And so he was very comfortable all over campus. You know, he represented his fraternity on the Interfraternity Council. So he really tried to make his life bigger than the fraternity. But what was interesting, when I got his FBI file, because he had been an FBI agent during World War II, that when his friends and professors and people from his hometown talked about him, they always mentioned that he was Jewish. Hmm. You know, it was always that, you know, he was bright and his family was a high-type Jewish family and, you know, sort of in spite of the fact that he was Jewish. So anti-Semitism was definitely alive and well, but he sort of overcame it in his own way.
It was at UT and I guess also in law school that he got to be good friends with John Connolly.
He did. It's always a little exaggerated how close he and John Connolly were at the University of Texas. I think at one point the story was that they were roommates at Texas, but they weren't. They were acquaintances. John Connolly was a couple of years ahead of Strauss. And then it wasn't really until the late 50s when Connolly was a lawyer in Fort Worth and Strauss was a lawyer in Dallas that the two came together on Johnson's nomination. Connolly was running the effort to get Johnson the presidential nomination. And he asked Strauss if he wanted to help out. And Strauss thought, well, the worst that'll happen here is that I'll, you know, be friends with a very powerful senator. So he sort of joined in that Johnson effort in 1960.
Can you talk for a minute, Catherine, about the tensions that existed in the Democratic Party in the late 50s and throughout the 60s that really sort of left it in some ways in a shambles by the early 70s?
Yes. Well, it's hard to imagine now, but at the time that Strauss entered politics in Texas, there were only Democrats. There were conservative Democrats and liberal Democrats, but, you know, there hadn't been a Republican senator until John Tower was elected to take Johnson's Senate seat in the 60s. I think that was the first maybe since Reconstruction. But there was a great divide between the more conservative John Connolly faction and then the Ralph Yarborough. He was United States senator, very liberal. And it was very tense. And Strauss managed to be John Connolly's best friend, basically, while John Connolly was governor of Texas. And he did make slight enemies with Yarborough, but he always managed to sort of walk a fine line in when they got to national politics so that he wasn't only in Connolly's tent. You know, he wasn't only in the Johnson tent. You know, he supported the Vietnam War because he was supporting President Johnson. But he really understood the need for compromise, and he didn't want to exclude the Yarborough faction. He wanted to make sure that everyone was getting along, especially at that 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, which, of course, was just disastrous.
Did it come as any surprise to Strauss when Connolly, in fact, supported Richard Nixon's presidential campaign?
I think it was a surprise and a blow to their personal friendship. Mm-hmm. There were a few months there where they weren't speaking to each other. And when he was governor, they would just talk on the phone all the time like teenage girls, as one of Connolly's staffers put it recently. Connolly did run Democrats for Nixon in 1972. And this was when Bob was working really hard to get the Democratic Party liquid. Even though he wasn't chairman at the time McGovern was running, it was a bit of a personal blow to Strauss. And Connolly then in 1973, after his mentor Lyndon Johnson passed away, actually switched to the Republican Party. And that was hard on Strauss too. And there was always a question of if John Connolly had stayed a Democrat, you know, would Strauss have been able to get him to the White House in 1976 instead of Carter? But I think now, looking back, people realize it was probably a mistake for John Connolly to switch parties. But at the time, he was doing it because, you know, Nixon, everyone thought Nixon would be in the White House. You know, Watergate, no one saw Watergate coming. And Connolly was sort of a favorite of Nixon's.
I have to tell you, I was alive in 1972, but not old enough to be reading the papers every day. I was astonished to read that the Democratic Party held a telethon. They went on TV and raised money from people to get the party out of hock.
Yes, this was Strauss's idea along with John Y. Brown, who was the Kentucky Fried Chicken heir. And they thought, well, how can we raise money in a hurry? And they decided to produce this telethon. And the first one was in 1972. But then Bob did it for the next 4 years when he was chairman. He just loved the telethons. He loved being with the movie stars because they got a lot of great talent. That mm-hmm. first year, Ruth Burrell, Milton Berle's wife, was in charge of getting talent to come. And so they had a lot of, you know, big names at the time. And I think Shirley MacLaine made the first donation on the air. And he really saw this as an opportunity to present a united front for the Democratic Party to America and to say, you know, we really have our act together and you should support us. And, you know, it's not as bad. We're not as bad as you thought we were based on our behavior in 1968.
So it was PR in addition to fundraising.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, he was good friends with Reverend Billy Graham. And he was so excited when Billy Graham was coming on. I think it was the 1975 telethon, because he said he's going to come on and bless that money while we receive it. And that doesn't offend me one bit. He said this at a meeting of the DNC. And I have I got all those transcripts from the National Archive. So I was one of the few researchers at the National Archive sitting there chuckling to myself, reading all these outrageous things that Bob was saying in the meetings.
Author Catherine Magar is my guest. Her new book is called The Whole Damn Deal, Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, you can send an email to think@kera.org, or you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. We do have lines open. Right now, we want to take a brief break to update you on the status of our fall membership campaign, and of course, to ask your support if you have not yet had a chance to go online to kera.org or to call 1-888-694-6931. Hello, Jeff Whittington.
Hello, Chris Boyd. What a great conversation. We're thrilled that Catherine's here with us today, and also appreciate her patience during these quick breaks. This is your chance right now to support the Think Show today. Chris, we have a goal for this hour of $3,500 to raise. We've been meeting the goals this morning, thanks to so many of you. We'd love for you Think listeners to step up today and help us stay on track. Again, we're trying to end this membership campaign 4 days earlier than normal, next Thursday, actually. So getting to this $3,500 mini goal during this hour today is really important, and we're already making some progress right now.
Wow, spectacular. We are we need $3,050 to raise in order to make our goal. So thank you to those of you who have brought us down by that $450. Your contribution now in any amount will take us even closer to the goal. We know how much from past experience. We know that this audience really loves Texas history, and you love finding out about the people from our state who either made a huge difference here or on the national spectrum. And this is a wonderful opportunity for you to support this kind of local history that you really care about, and also to make a contribution to KERA. And we do have copies available, Jeff, of The Whole Damn Deal.
That's right. You can get your very own copy of Catherine Magar's book when you join the station with a contribution of at least $120 today. It's $10 a month when you become a sustaining member. Look, politics is going to be big this year in the news, and we're going to cover it from a bunch of different angles here on Think. And I think this is sort of the opening shot for us in this political season, this conversation today, because really perspective is so important when we're looking at the issues of the political rancor in Washington, D.C., what our own governor is running for the presidency again, and we've seen that movie, or at least the first episode from that.
We've seen
that
the
trilogy.
YouTube, actually.
We've seen that trilogy, the first episode of that trilogy before. So, it's going to be a big year, there's going to be a substantial cost to covering politics this year for KERA, for NPR. So we're hoping that today you will help offset some of those costs and help us meet our mini goal during this hour. $3,500, just $2,990 left to go. The number to call, 888-694-6931. Write it down, 1-888-694-6931, or contribute, click and join online at kera.org.
Of course, you can also check out thank you gifts on kera.org, including copies of The Whole Damn Deal by Catherine Magar. It's the story of Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics, available to those of you who are interested in making a contribution at or above the $120 level today. We have other thank you gifts as well, if something else would be more likely to tempt you to make that call. But please take action now. Help us get to our goal of $3,500 for Think in this hour, 1-888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Certificate Program in Financial Planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Catherine J. Magar. Her new book is called The Whole Damn Deal, Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics. If you want to join this conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So I want to talk about Strauss's run for the DNC chairmanship because he was it was a hotly contested race at the time. He was surprised that Barbara Jordan, of all people, did not support his nomination.
Yes, Barbara Jordan, African-American congresswoman from Texas, had just been elected. And Strauss had been one of those, you know, in Texas politics who had helped her get to Congress. And so he naturally assumed that she would be voting for him for chairman. But because Strauss was seen as sort of this conservative Texan in the model of John Connolly, the Black caucus in the DNC was not supporting him officially. And so she felt that she couldn't do it. And she ended up telling him, you know, my first vote when I get to Washington can't be against the Black caucus of the DNC. And he eventually forgave her and they became friends again. And he actually asked her to be one of the keynote speakers at the 1976 Democratic Convention in New York City. And it was the first woman ever to be a keynote speaker and the first African-American ever to do it. And that was all Strauss.
He had some really bold ideas for sort of managing and orchestrating the conventions that he was in charge of. Can you talk about some of the things that he pioneered that we're still doing today?
Yes. Well, he sort of came up with the prime time convention where you don't let anybody talk about any issues on the floor. Everything is solved off the floor. And the candidate speaks in prime time. This was after the 1968 debacle. And then in 1972, Strauss was there as treasurer. He wasn't really running the show, but he was paying the bills. And that was the year in which George McGovern gave his acceptance speech at 2:30 in the morning.
Not too many people up with work the next day.
Exactly. And then McGovern lost 49 states to Richard Nixon, not just because of that, but could not have helped. So in 1976, Strauss was chairman, and he really wanted a streamlined convention. The candidate was going to be speaking in primetime no matter what happened. And he also wanted to, again, as he was doing with the telethons, promote that united front for the Democratic Party. So in addition to Barbara Jordan, he also had John Glenn as the other keynote speaker. And so John Glenn was a freshman senator at the time, but, you know, an American hero, an icon, an astronaut. And a white man and kind of dull. And Strauss said he wanted to make bookends out of Barbara Jordan and John Glenn.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones to Ash in Plano. Hello,
hello.
Ash. Hi.
Hi, my name is Ashok Kumar, and I just want to make a comment.
Okay.
I'm listening to our show. First of all, I know John Connolly and Bobby Strauss was friends, and one reason John Connolly switched to Republican Party was Richard Nixon essentially promised him the Republican nomination in 76, and this was also told by H.R. Haldeman in his interview, number one. And number two, one of the first line on the platform hearing Bobby Strauss said was, internal division of Democratic Party has brought Richard Nixon and Agnew and Jerry Ford and country the disaster. So he was so much against Nixon and Ford, yet he still liked Connolly.
Well, let's see if we can get some perspective on that for you. Thanks so much for your call, Ash.
Yes. So Richard Nixon was a great fundraising tool for Strauss. And he would always say there's two reasons to donate to the Democratic Party, Richard Nixon and Spiro Agnew. But loyalty is very important in Texas politics, and Strauss and Connolly were good friends, and that's how their friendship sort of survived, you know, even after John Connolly became a Republican.
Was he able, for the most part, to not take it personally? I mean, we have this portrait in this book of someone who just absolutely, in a way that some people might take in a cynical fashion, but he loved the game. He loved sort of the horse race element of it. Was it like afterwards he could shake hands and drink a beer with the other side?
Yes, absolutely. Partisanship ended at the cocktail hour for Bob Strauss and for many others. And in regards to Ford, he and Ford remained friends, and he and Nixon actually became friendly during George H.W. Bush's presidency because they supported his policy on China, and they were sort of the only two people in the nation who supported Bush's policy on China. So they became friendly, and Nixon visited Strauss when he was ambassador to Russia. You know, when he was there in Moscow, he came and ate at the ambassador's residence. And it was because none of these were personal fights. They were political fights. And even George H.W. Bush was chairman of the Republican National Committee at the time that Strauss was chairman of the Democratic National Committee. And then Bush ended up going to China. And he wrote Strauss a letter from China. Strauss, you old bastard. And, you know, you're still, why are you picking on Ford? And I just can't get away from you. But it was clearly friendly. They were mm-hmm. friendly behind the scenes, even when publicly or in the newspaper, they were criticizing each other.
What made George H.W. Bush decide that Strauss would be the ideal candidate to be U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union at a critical time and then to the newly fledged new Russia at a very critical time?
Well, in 1991, America wanted to send the message to the Soviet Union that it had not forgotten them. They were not sending, America was not sending as much aid as the Soviet Union thought they could be, and there was a lot of internal turmoil there. And they thought that by sending Strauss, who was a close friend of the president, and of Jim Baker, who was the Secretary of State, another Texan, someone with a direct line to the White House, that they'd be sending a message to Gorbachev that we're there for you, we're going to be listening to you, and they wanted to send in an old political hand. Mm-hmm. And Strauss knew nothing about Russia at the time, and he admitted that. And that's something else that's changed today. You couldn't really say in the press, you know, I don't know anything about Russia, but I never knew anything about a job before I got there, and then still go on to be confirmed.
Yeah.
And his Senate confirmation hearing in 1991 was just a love fest. Republicans and Democratic senators just who admired Bob, you know, telling them how happy they were that he was taking this post. He did not expect to be flying into a coup the first time he went to Moscow. But in August of 1991, there was that military coup when Gorbachev was taken hostage and Yeltsin sort of became the leader of the people's movement. And Strauss flew over into this coup and no one really knew what was going to happen. And he just wanted to show that the Americans are here, the Americans care. And this was before he was officially ambassador because no one knew who was in charge in Russia, so he couldn't exactly present his credentials.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time he came back after Christmas, there was no more Soviet Union. And he came back as the first ambassador to the Russian Federation and really helped guide Yeltsin in a lot of political ways. Yeltsin really admired Bob and he looked to him for political advice. And Strauss just loved being over there as an observer and being comparing what he saw in Russia to what he saw in Congress and realizing that politics is universal and interpersonal relationships are universal.
So Strauss was known for this sort of good old boy, maybe swagger is the right word. Clearly he had experience that would serve him well in this diplomatic position. But I have to wonder if behind the scenes he spent even a moment thinking, what am I getting myself into here?
He absolutely wondered what he was getting himself into. And at first he turned the president down. But he always said, you don't turn down a president for very long. And he was very patriotic. So even though the president was a Republican and he was known at that time as Mr. Democrat, he really thought that if the president asks you to do something, you do it. And it doesn't matter if that president is a Republican or a Democrat. But he did rely very heavily on his deputy ambassador, Jim Collins, who later went on to become ambassador to Russia himself, because Jim Collins sort of had all the expertise. And Strauss, at this point in his life, the age of 73, he knew well enough to know what he didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So he really relied on Jim Collins to guide him in terms of navigating Russian policy, because he did wonder what he was getting himself into.
Bob Strauss never even pretended not to love the media and attention from the media. And this is another thing that today seems there's plenty of people who like to be out there, but they all want to, you know, nobody would like to say that they enjoyed the company of journalists.
And I think part of that is that journalism has changed, and probably mm-hmm. for the better. It's probably better that the politicians and the journalists who are covering them aren't quite as buddy-buddy as they were when Strauss was in his heyday. But the press just loved him. He would throw these chili parties that started out in his apartment, and he would invite the press over to have his homemade chili. And at a certain point, these chili parties got so big and popular that he had to move them to a hotel.
Because he was at the ballroom. He was living at the Watergate.
He was living mm-hmm. at the Watergate at the time in 1972, still living at the Watergate today, just celebrated his 93rd birthday. Mm-hmm. But the political press just adored him. And I interviewed Sam Donaldson for this book, and he said, "What's the first thing about Bob Strauss? Well, he's a very likable guy." And it's true. They just liked him. And then he went on to say, if that were all it was, we wouldn't still be sitting here talking about him, because he had a lot of other qualities. But they could always get a colorful quote out of him, and he would never steer them wrong. You know, if he couldn't say something, he would tell them, you know, I can't tell you about that.
What was his approach to crisis management when it came to the media?
He really knew how to spin them so that it was clear that he was in control. Mm-hmm. And I think this was probably especially important for him when he was ambassador to the Middle East peace negotiations. Carter sent him over there to kind of continue the work that he and Secretary of State Cy Vance had started, with the Camp David Accords. And it was a very tough post for Strauss. And I don't know that he actually did handle the press as well as he hoped to, because there was a lot of criticism of the way that he was handling the situation. And also, he wasn't getting along very well with Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was National Security Advisor. He didn't want to be reporting to Cy Vance and the State Department. He wanted to report directly to the president. So that was an instance maybe where he didn't really have the press in his pocket. But normally within Washington, you know, he could make a few well-placed phone calls and make the crisis go away.
Catherine J. Magar is my guest. We're speaking this hour about her new book, The Whole Damn Deal, Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics. We'll come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes and take more of your calls and emails. The phone number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org. We do have copies available of The Whole Damn Deal available to listeners today who want to make a contribution at or above the $120 level. If you are ready to do this, we would really love to hear from you now at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Thank you so much to Carol Swantison in Bryan, Andrew Schaefer in McKinney, Daniel Blackwell in Fort Worth, Stephen Maines in Farmers Branch. And hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Steve Hunterson Richardson also has joined the station. Kevin McCoy in Garland. Ms. Robin Brown in Cedar Hill, and Jim and Linda Qualia in Plano. In just the last few minutes, we've heard from these folks. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 888-694-6931. Or you can click and join online at kera.org.
Your contribution to the station allows us to continue bringing substantive news and ideas and issues to the airwaves in North Texas. There is nowhere else on the broadcast spectrum in North Texas where you could have an hour conversation devoted to something as interesting as we see as the subject of Robert Strauss, something that gives us perspective on what's happening in the headlines. So many other news outlets are forced to sort of only go with what has just happened 30 seconds ago. That's not necessarily the way we want to define information on this show and in public radio in general. We want to have the time, the luxury of time, to really explore things and talk about nuance. Your contribution makes that possible. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can go to kera.org.
So our goal for this hour is to raise $3,500. It's a small mini goal within the overall overall goal of $700,000 for the drive. And Chris, we've made some progress. We're just looking for $2,730 left to raise in this hour. And you can help whittle that away by calling 888-694-6931 or by contributing at kera.org. Reaching this mini goal on time means that we're on track to end this fall membership campaign 4 days earlier than usual. You can help right now by clicking and joining online at kera.org. Or phone in your gift to KERA. Just call 888-694-6931. That's 888-694-6931.
Your dollars really are the lifeblood of this station. We really appreciate that you come to us every day as a listener, perhaps as a podcast listener. We love that you interact on the website at kera.org. But the reason that we are able to be here for you is because of contributions from people just like you who value the programming. Thank you so much to all of you who are online right now making your contributions. Some of you we know are choosing to receive as a thank you gift copies of Catherine J. Magar's new book, The Whole Damn Deal, Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics.
Yeah, it's available at the $120 membership level, just $10 a month when you become a sustaining member with a $10 a month or more contribution. Philip Johnson in Bedford has made a contribution. Thank you, Philip. Also, Mary Cronkey in Plano, Mr. Lancer J. Hardy in Denton. We also heard from Barbara O'Gorman in Little Elm and Judy Gilpin in Bedford and Clara and Michael Latham in Wichita Falls. Thanks to each of you. You're the reason that it's working. You're the reason that KERA is staying on the air. You're the reason that the station exists in the first place. We have raised a little bit more money, a little bit more toward our goal of $3,500. Chris, just $2,490 left to raise in this hour.
Remember that if you are a former member, meaning that you last renewed your membership more than a year ago and sort of let it lapse, or you have are coming back to us, the board of KERA has a challenge for former members and perhaps a former friend. If you will come back, rejoin the station today, the board of directors of KERA will match your contribution dollar for dollar. So it's a wonderful time to come back into the fold to support KERA and to make your contribution go twice as far. Please get in touch with us now at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
Yeah, there's no limit on the amount of your contribution that will be matched. Call right now, 888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org. Make your contribution, and KERA's board of directors, if you have let your membership lapse, well, when you come back today, KERA's board of directors will match that contribution. 888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's certificate program in financial planning. You can gain a professional advantage with SMU's 9-month intensive CFP program starting in Plano this January. Learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Catherine J. Magar, whose new book is called The Whole Damn Deal, Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or kera.org. The email address is think@kera.org. We have an email here from Robert who writes, "Once I attended a Dallas Bar Association roast of his law partner, John Hauer. Robert Strauss was the MC, as I recall. When introducing Hauer, he said that John was a very religious man because the other day he told me that he had just read something in the Bible, short I for Bible. He says it, Robert says, it doesn't come off as well in writing, but it made us all laugh. He was superb at what he did.
He did have a great sense of humor, and it came through in politics and in his law practice. And Akin Gump, which now, is a firm.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, all over the world. And that started as Gump and Strauss, a two-man operation in 1945 in Dallas. They flipped a coin to see who would get the bigger office and who would have their name go first. So Gump got his name first. Strauss got the bigger office. And then when Henry Akin, a somewhat older lawyer, came in, Strauss really wanted that name to go first because he wanted some of the old Dallas business. So now people ask, why isn't Strauss's name in Akin Gump? And it's because he thought that getting business was more important than satisfying his ego.
Strategic deal making.
Exactly.
Another thing that he said quite openly was that he was really good at making money, and the fact that he had his own money made it easier for him to sort of stay clean in his dealings in Washington.
Yes, he didn't get to Washington until he was already in his 50s. So he had had time to establish himself in Texas and make a lot of money in Texas. As he always liked to say, he was one rich son of a bitch. And that was one of his favorite expressions. But he did. He had investments outside of Washington. And he was always very, very careful about his reputation as an honest broker. That was especially important when there was a lot of cash in politics. And he always says that he advises young people today who are going into politics that they should really get a little money in their pocket first, try to establish themselves so that once they get to Washington, they can tell anybody they want to go to hell and they don't have to cheat on their expense accounts. I apologize for all the salty language. That is all Strauss's language. But yes, he thought it was very important to sort of already be established before getting to the political scene.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Jim on the line from Dallas. Hello, Jim.
Oh, thank you, dear. I have a particular question about John Connally and Strauss. Connally was indicted for taking a $10,000 cash bribe from the American Milk Producers Association after he had become involved in the Nixon administration. And I heard, and I'm not going to say why, that Strauss was instrumental in getting those charges dropped or defused. Do you know anything about that?
Thanks for your call, Jim.
Yes, Strauss was instrumental. He convinced famous trial lawyer Edward Bennett Williams, and he convinced John Connally, they both needed convincing, Edward Bennett Williams should defend Connally in the trial, which he then did. And also Strauss helped get some character witnesses for Connally that ended up being very important, including Barbara Jordan. And Billy Graham was one of those who testified to Connally's character. And when Strauss asked Barbara Jordan to testify, she said, "I would never testify for John Connally," because they were opposite ends of the political spectrum and no longer even in the same party. And Strauss said, "Do you know him to be an honest broker?" She said, "Yes." He said, "Well, that's all you have to say when you get there." So I don't know if he was pivotal in that crisis, but he definitely gave John Connally all the help that he could.
So we've talked a lot this hour about Strauss's work sort of across both parties. And there's a great story at the end of the book about the fact that a young Senator Barack Obama was introduced to Robert Strauss by Ken Millman, of all people.
Yes, Ken Millman, who was chairman of the RNC and ran George Bush's reelection campaign, worked at Akin Gump as an associate and then later as a partner. And so he was always friends with Strauss and they had regular lunches. And for one of these lunches, he thought that he should invite an old law school friend of his, Senator Barack Obama. And he thought that Obama should hear what Strauss had to say because he could anticipate that Obama wanted to run for president. And so after the lunch, Millman, as the Republican, sort of bowed out of the room and let Obama and Strauss have a candid conversation. And, Strauss advised Obama to get out around the country and make sure he was seen so that in 10 or 12 years he could run for president. And this was in 2006. And Obama said, "Why wait 10 or 12 years?" And then, as we know, he announced very shortly after that. But that sort of demonstrates the behind-the-scenes nonpartisanship that really isn't palatable for some reason to the American electorate right now. You can't really be seen fraternizing with the other side.
He fought for years and years about writing his own memoir. Why didn't he make progress on that?
He did make progress in that he hired a ghostwriter and they came up with an almost complete draft. But he had a personality that made it very difficult for him to write about his own life. He was very positive, very upbeat person, and he liked to sort of whitewash over anything negative that happened in his life, and he didn't like to dwell on failures, and that was partly what made him so successful, but it also made for a not very interesting memoir. And also, it's very difficult to capture Strauss's voice. He was so funny. And I think that a memoir was maybe not the right way to capture his life. And I never would have tried to endeavor to ghostwrite an autobiography. But doing a biography where I was able to, you know, quote him directly and all the many humorous things he said from the Democratic National Committee meetings where I got the transcripts from, or the Situation Room meetings that I got the transcripts from, I think that made the difference.
You're candid right up front in the book about the fact that you have not only a professional interest in Strauss, but also a personal relationship with him.
Strauss is my great uncle. His brother, Ted Strauss, who lives here in Dallas, is my grandfather. Annette Strauss, who was the mayor of Dallas, mm-hmm. is my grandmother. And so I grew up knowing Strauss as Uncle Bob. And I spent Thanksgivings and Christmas and Passover with him. And I spent my 7th birthday at Spasso House, the ambassador's residence in Moscow. And I had no idea.
Chuck E. Cheese was booked. I mean, what an amazing experience for a kid.
It was incredible. And he asked what I wanted. And at that time, I wanted anything pink. So he made sure I had a pink cake on my birthday mm-hmm. and pink ice cream. And that was what I knew of the man. And people ask me a lot what surprised me most in doing the research for this book. And honestly, well, first of all, everything surprised me because mm-hmm. it was all new to me. He's not really the same man with his family. He likes to talk about his own grandchildren. He doesn't talk about himself. But just the amount of power that he wielded really surprised me. I had no idea. And, you know, I guess I knew on some level that he was ambassador when I was in Moscow at the age of 7. But I had no idea what a critical time in history it was.
Did you have any concern going into this? Like, what if I find something that I'm sort of obligated as a writer to reveal, but that doesn't, you know, go well for the family?
I was extremely concerned about that. Mm-hmm. But Bob lived his career so much in the spotlight that it was kind of all already out there. He did take illegal campaign contributions when he was treasurer of the Democratic National Committee because everyone took illegal campaign contributions in that pre-Watergate era.
You're not endorsing this. You're just saying this is the fact.
No, this was what went on in the 60s and the early 70s, and it ended with Watergate. And Strauss was nearly indicted by the Watergate special prosecutor for having taken this corporate cash, but the statute of limitations had run out. And so when I was starting this project, you know, I had a discussion with a family member who was a little concerned about the indictment and the illegal cash being sort of in the book in that way, because, you know, he always would say it was technically illegal, but he never really admitted that it was illegal. But yes, the statute of limitations had run out. And also, his lawyer made this point, which was, if you get Strauss, you have to get everybody. You know, if Strauss, then everyone. Really, everyone was doing it at that time. So we've come a long way in terms of improving ethics in fundraising since those days.
Was he interested to read the book?
Oh, my goodness, yes. and I wouldn't let him read it until it was finished because he didn't have editorial control over it.
Right.
And so, yes, I got it to him when he was on vacation in Del Mar, where he still goes every summer so he can go to the racetrack, and called him. And he said, well, I don't just like it, I love it, which was very, very sweet of him to say, even if he didn't love every single thing in it.
Well, Catherine McGarr, thank you so much for spending this hour with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
The new book is called The Whole Damn Deal, Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics. We appreciate all of you who have been with us this hour as listeners, as people who have called in, people who have written in. And we especially want to thank those of you who have made contributions either online or over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. And of course, we love to read your names. Some of you choose to remain anonymous, and so let this be the thank you to those of you who have not had your names read aloud. You know who you are, and we really, really appreciate your support.
I'm Jeff Whittington.
Hello,
senior
Jeff.
Producer of The Think Show and host of Anything You Ever Wanted to Know, and I'm here with Chris to ask you to call 888-694-6931 to support Think and KERA today. During the first Think Hour, our goal is $3,500. We've raised some of that. We're going to get an update here shortly. $2,215 left to raise. We have about 6.5 minutes. So your call right now, maybe you're a Friends member.
Friends membership would be great right
who,
now.
Who you need to renew. You can do that by calling 888-694-6931. That $1,500 contribution would help us get really close to making our goal for the hour. Or maybe you've been considering becoming a member at the Friends level. Maybe you can do the whole $2,215 with your contribution right now online at KERA.org and help us meet this goal and stay on track to finish this membership campaign 4 days sooner than usual.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to KERA.org. If you are interested to read the whole damn deal, Robert Strauss and the Art of Politics, we do have copies available at or above the $120 level. You can also make a contribution at another level, choose another kind of thank you gift or no thank you gift at all. It really is entirely up to you.
It is up to you, and there are all kinds of things on the website. If you go to KERA.org, you can see. There's the brand new black KERA logo T-shirt that a lot of people have chosen. It's been very, very popular. But, you know, the most popular thing, honestly, this drive is the fact that we're trying to end the drive. It's an experiment. We're trying to end this drive 4 days sooner than usual, and we're working toward this mini goal by 1 o'clock here in just a few minutes of $3,500. $2,215 left to raise by 1 o'clock, 5 minutes from now. Reaching this goal on time means we're on track to end the KERA Fall Membership Campaign 4 days earlier than usual. Many of you have responded, and thank you so much if you have responded to that. That's really what you want. We've heard you. You've asked for shorter, more efficient drives. And so we're asking you, if you have not yet done your part, to phone in your gift at 888-694-6931 or click and join at KERA.org.
The money that we ask you for goes directly to the programming that you value on this station that we know that you listen to on a regular basis. Maybe you use it as a springboard of discussion with your friends and your colleagues. It could be that the people in your circle don't talk about their support of public radio. So maybe when you hear us talking, you think, well, I don't know who it is that makes contributions, but I don't think they mean me. We, in fact, do mean you. Sometimes it doesn't feel that way, but all those numbers, as they come ticking down and as we get closer to our goals, it's money from people just like you and me, people who think, well, I do listen all the time. I do rely on the service. I do want it to be here for myself and for the rest of the community, and so I can find it in my heart to make a contribution. You know, you can set up a sustaining membership for as little as $5 a month. So that at $5 a month, it's almost invisible money. It really doesn't even feel like it's coming out of your budget at all. And yet it makes a difference for us in this station and helps to offset the cost of the programming you listen to.
If you set that up, that $5 a month sustaining membership, we'll thank you with 2 KERA reusable shopping bags. If you can up it to $7.50 a month, we'll send you 3 shopping bags. And if you'll make a sustaining membership commitment at $10 a month, we'll give you 5 reusable KERA shopping bags. So not only can you have a continuing impact on KERA, the station that you listen to and love, but you'll also be able to have less of a footprint and not use as many of those plastic bags out there.
We've just seen the number left to go for this hour of Think drop from 2215 to 2,165. Now we're at 2,100. It's wonderful to see that number dropping as we go along because of your contributions. But we are nowhere near even halfway to the goal. So if you can, for this hour, within this hour, right now, go online to KERA.org and make your contribution, or go on the phone to 1-888-694-6931. Put your money to work, and you will also be significant in helping this goal, this specific hour.
This is your source for NPR News and Think, of course, every day. 90.1 KERA Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton. Online at KERA.org. Also 100.1 K261 CW in Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR in Wichita Falls, and good old 99.3 K257 EV up in Sherman. Wherever you listen, though, you're listening to your public radio station, and your public radio station, it relies on you. we're really talking to you, and we're still looking for $2,100 in the next couple of minutes to make our goal for this hour of Think and to stay on track for the membership campaign. The number to call, 888-694-6931, or contribute at kera.org.
So we did this somewhat risky thing in planning a drive that was 4 days shorter than normal. Please don't make us decide that this was a bad idea. Your contributions, keeping us on target, also really keep your programming on target that you rely on KERA. Go online right now, look at thank you gifts, check out ways to pay, set up a sustaining membership, or just pay directly. You can do all that at kera.org, including choosing a copy of The Whole Damn Deal as your thank you gift. You can also make a contribution over the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Thank you for your support.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.